We are now live with this week's episode of the Electric Podcast, and I'm Fred Lambert, your host. And as usual, Seth Winchard forget to remove his YouTube sound. That's what you're hearing in the background right now. But no, Seth, you're good?
I'm good. I want to apologize to our readers in advance. I forgot my Apple USB dongle, which I always forget. And it's mostly Apple's fault, but partially my fault that the audio is not going to be perfect today.
Yeah, the owner of the biggest Apple blog on the planet still doesn't know how to end all his dongles.
It's hard. It's rough.
It's the tough life. All right, so big week this week, as always. A lot of news, especially in the Tesla world. But also, we got some cool things in other aspects. GM starting making some investment that could be interesting, or maybe not. We'll talk about that. But first off, let's start out with a quick word from our sponsor, Dandelion.
Yeah, so this week, Electrek is again sponsored by Dandelion Energy, the leading home geothermal energy company in New York. Homeowners who make the switch to geothermal heating save on average $2,250 per year, $100. That's pretty good. $2,200, not bad. DandelionEnergy.com/Electrek. Check to see if your home qualifies. It's a solution to a kind of problem for a lot of New Yorkers or Northeasterners who use oil or propane to heat their homes. Very expensive, big trucks coming out to deliver. Just 5 feet below the surface of your home, the temperature of the earth is warm enough to provide you with enough heating in the winter. Today's sponsor, Dandelion Energy, uses cutting-edge geothermal technology to harness the earth's warm temperature to safely and reliably heat your home without relying on expensive, outdated, dangerous heating fuels. They are doing it with a cost-effective system that actually saves homeowners thousands per year on average. How many people currently heat their homes with fuel and propane in New York and the surrounding areas? About 7 million households. That's quite a bit. So you might be wondering how come geothermal wasn't viable before. The answer is that past systems have been too expensive and used out-of-date technology, meaning that they weren't cost-competitive with fossil fuel heating. Dandelion Energy finally makes residential home geothermal cost competitive with a system eligible for ITC tax credit and other local tax credits. And as I said before, I'm a big fan of Dandelion. They use physics first principles, which our favorite companies use. They drill a smaller hole further down into the earth, bypassing rocks and other issues. And again, saves you $2,250 per year. That's quite a bit of money. So check out dandelionenergy.com/electrek to see if your home qualifies.
Yes, thanks a lot to Dandelion for sponsoring the show. And this week, we're going to start out the show with talking a little bit about Tesla's prices. Tesla's price changes specifically, which are quite common now. And we're going to try to understand them in the context of the end of the quarter and really what they really are, which I think is basically a discount. They were temporary discounts. I guess there's a bunch of different ways to look at it, but what happened this week really is like we knew what the prices were supposed to go up on Monday. That's what Elon announced after he sort of backtracked a little bit on his plan to go sales online only. But then what happened on Monday is that Tesla, on Tuesday night, I guess, because the prices were supposed to increase by 3% on Monday night. And they said that due to high demand, they weren't able to process all the orders that were placed. So they extended the price increase by 2 days. Now, there's a bunch of different ways to look at this. Like, first of all, is it really because of high demand? I think that's a strange way to put it, because if you're really high demand and the reason you are extending it, you say it's because you weren't able to process those orders, that's fine. That maybe you weren't able to process the orders. That could definitely be true. But then why extend for 2 days new orders? You could just take those few days to process those orders that you couldn't process. I mean, they were placed. Maybe people are looking to get their financing together and they couldn't get the financing together, so they couldn't complete the order. That's all fine. But what they're really doing now is they try to get more orders in. And they gave a new deadline for it. And that deadline also happens to be right at the end of the quarter and everything. So to me, it looks a lot like a discount. It was a temporary to drive order through offering a mild discount for a few days. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, it feels like this is a numbers drive. Like they're really, they want to get the numbers. They don't want to have a big dip from last quarter because they obviously had a lot of demand drivers, especially the $7,500 tax credit, which ended. So a lot of people were hitting the order button, obviously holiday sales, all this stuff. And I think with like the first month's shipments going to Europe and having a you know, a month in China and having like a month lag time, I think Tesla's really like they want to make sure it doesn't look like their sales are falling off, even if the, you know, they might have fallen off a little bit in the US. But it doesn't seem like they're having any problems getting rid of them in Europe and even China. So I think they just want to avoid the appearance of slowing sales. And they're doing a lot of stuff to kind of keep that look going. I don't agree. I don't think it's that important. I would rather see like some stability in pricing, in deliveries, like, you know, build up a kind of a more, you know, just, it just seems like everything is like right on the edge all the time at Tesla. And I don't think that's like, it's great because I know that Tesla's new and whatever, but like it's, I would like to see them driving toward a more stable environment, and it doesn't feel like they are. It's just going up and down, up and down, up and down.
I think you had a good point when you said it's about, they don't want to leave the perception that their sales are going down. And the key word I think here is the perception of it. Because I don't think that you and I or most people that are not short Tesla see any kind of demand problem long-term or mid-term, really. I think we see the demand for Tesla being pretty strong. But Tesla, if this goes back to all the way back to Elon trying to bring the company private, is that Tesla is so focused on pleasing Wall Street with their quarterly numbers that they were very afraid to have a big inventory at the end of a quarter and not delivering enough vehicles. So those kinds of tactics to boost sales at the end of the quarter, like the discounts and like a few other things we're going to talk about on the show, because that wasn't the only thing that Tesla did to boost sales at the end of the quarter. I don't think they show a clear general demand problem. I think they show more that Tesla is trying to deliver as many cars they can at the very end of the quarter to make their numbers look good. And why it seems even to another extreme this quarter, I think it goes back to the European launch of the Model 3s, where Tesla focused on delivering cars in Europe. And now they are coming to the end of the quarter and they cannot just make more cars for Europe, because then those cars are going to be on cargo ships for a few weeks before they can get delivered. So instead, they are making cars for the US or maybe even the Canadian market, cars that can be delivered faster. And they have maybe neglected a little bit the demand in the US and in Canada during the quarter because of the European launch, which brought, of course, a ton of orders for Tesla. And, of course, the fiasco of the sales online only that affected a lot of Tesla's retail staff in the US, which I'm sure affected them in a certain way. But then there was also the launch of the $35,000 Model 3, which by itself and created a lot of demand. But finally, on Wednesday night, the price increases came in. And they said it was supposed to be around 3% on average. The average is closer to like 2%. The $35,000 is the one that, as promised, remains the same price, which, I mean, doesn't make a lot of sense, because if you're backtracking your sales online only, then the price should increase across the board. But I think that it's really, again, a perception thing. Just the promise of $35,000 more than three, they have to deliver one. So even with that change of strategy, they still are delivering it. So they're really focused on perception more than anything else. Nah, I don't like that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell. Sometimes I'm like, oh, this is all part of the plan. And sometimes I'm like, they have no idea. Like, they're just throwing darts at the board.
I mean,
I go back and forth.
Yeah, if we want to get into it, so that's not on script right now for what we've been telling on that. But the way I see it, really, and I was talking to someone about it earlier, all the move that Tesla is doing right now, like with their sales staff, the employees, with firing half the recruiting team and slashing compensation, then doing the whole prices thing with the price going up and down and autopilot, full self-driving packages and everything like that. I feel like Tesla is having a cash crunch, but so they're looking who's going to pay for that cash crunch. And there's the way I see it, there's always three people in the company that can pay for it. The consumers, the employees, or the shareholders. And right now, Tesla is making the employees and the consumers pay for all those, the pressure that they're receiving right now. The way I see it, you should make the shareholders pay. And the way you do that is that you raise capital. I'm sure that Tesla would be able to raise capital, and they could raise a decent amount and actually accelerate their plans, like the Model Y launch and the Tesla Semi launch and all those plans. But I feel like they are falling under pressure from Wall Street, right? Like Elon said a while ago that he didn't want to raise money, so he'd be walking back on his words.
I feel like Elon swore, like he's like, all right, I'm never raising capital again. Like, mm-hmm. I swear to God, I'm never doing it. And I will die before I raise more capital. It feels like he made it, like, promise to himself that he wouldn't do it, even though clearly Tesla could do it. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of his shareholders would like to get more into it, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it would dilute the stock, so it would definitely make the shareholders pay for the cash crunch right now. But I feel like they're the one that, like, those people that really believe in the company long term, then, like, they would pay for it. They would do it. I think it's a better way to approach it than having the employees, which, like, a lot of employees have been really screwed by Tesla over the last month or so. And many of them are like hardcore, like they believe in the mission and everything, and they're great people that even if ultimately I agree sales should go online, I think that Tesla can still use a lot of those people going long term. It's a hard thing to see. Like, I feel like Elon backed himself up in the corner on this one and should have been willing to go raise capital. That said, there's still definitely a way out of it. And Tesla, I think, is starting to find it with all those other dumb levers, including for instance, the referral program that they just came back with. The referral program, was that a surprise for you? The referral program coming back?
I kind of felt like it was going to come back because it just makes so much sense. Like, you know, telling your friends about it. Like, I probably sold. I mean, you know, clearly online we sold quite a bit, but like, you know, just the people in town and mm-hmm. my family, I probably sold probably 10 Teslas. And strangely, two of them didn't show up on my list. So I wonder if somebody might have taken my referral at the Tesla dealership.
But there was a lot of rumors about that, man. Yeah. And that's sad if that happened, because it's, yeah, it's not great. I mean, Tesla employees are not allowed to participate in the referral program, of course, but the idea is that the rumors were that some employees were, instead of using the referral code that someone was giving to them, or just like looking for another one because they don't have one specifically, that employees will use the one of a friend and give them a lot of referral code like that. Just a rumor right now. We don't know if it's true, but that was that. So the new referral program is has been updated a lot, though. It's nothing like the last one. Well, not nothing like, it's similar to the last one, but some pretty significant changes. First off, you don't just get Roadster based on how many referrals you get. Tesla's gonna give out every month Founders Series Model Y and quarterly Founders Series Roadster.
And if you've already won a Roadster, you can't win another Roadster.
I think it's through that program, though. So I don't know if, like, someone that won it through the last program, they can or they cannot, if it's specific to that program. But it would make sense that you would get one. And same thing for the Model Y. So my understanding is that you accumulate those things. And so it's still going to be a thing that the top referrer is going to get Model Y sooner, I think. But then as soon as you won one, you go back to zero, and you cannot win the same price twice.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really go back to zero. You just go to nothing. Like, you can't, you know, win. So,
well, there's quarterly and there's Model Y. There's the quarterly and monthly one. So probably you can still accumulate other chances to win based on the Roadster. But they're going to give out every month a Model Y to the top referrer. But as soon as one, so throughout the year, they could get to 12 top one and then go back. I'm not sure I like it. Like, at first I thought it was like a raffle type of thing where you just, the more you put the referrals, the higher chance you got, but anyone can win. I thought that would have made more sense.
Yeah. I mean, on their side, they basically capped it at 4 Roadsters and 12 Model Ys for the year.
Yeah. Which makes a lot more sense monetarily. Like, the actual value of it is a lot less than they're going to give out 80 Roadster for free, plus maybe like twice that amount with significant discounts too. So
right.
We're talking the tens of millions. Yeah. This one is limited to probably less than 10 million total a year for something that's going to drive a lot of sales. Because there's the other aspect of the program, which I think is also like a big upgrade. I mean, I think this side of it is also an upgrade. I think I just thought of like a full raffle would have been more fair. But the other part of it is that when you give someone a referral, they get 1,000 miles of free supercharging on the new car that they are buying, and you get 1,000 miles on your car if you're not under the unlimited free supercharging program. So technically, if you're not on that, every time you do a referral, you still get something out of Tesla, which is doesn't have an extremely high value. I mean, a bunch of people try to attach a value to it, but it's highly dependent on where you're located and how much you pay for supercharging there. But it's still like at $50 or $200 of value every time you get it. Though I assume that Tesla's going to cap the time that you can have, that you can use those credits, the supercharger credits. So maybe like you need to use them within a year. And not that many people use like 1,000 miles supercharging a year.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't even, like, what, for me, that would, like, I use supercharger
every week, you know, basically.
Well, for Vermont, but I have that free on my Model X anyway. But I'm thinking on my Model 3, I use the supercharger. I mean, it's got 310 miles. I use the supercharger once every month, maybe 2 months. And it's like $5 or $10. So for me, that wouldn't be a big deal.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I saw with the program. So you're in the same bus as me, where you have one car on the free limited supercharging and one car that is not on the free limited supercharging.
Right.
And I look at my referral program, and it only says I was getting two chances of winning per referral, and not the 1,000 miles supercharging, because I assume Tesla sees my account as being free supercharging. I don't know if it was the same case for you. I don't get that 1,000 miles of range when I make a referral, because I assume Tesla thinks that I'm just free supercharging. And I am just free supercharging, because my performance Model 3 is officially free supercharging, because I still didn't get my $5,000 back that's supposed to remove my free supercharging. They say that they are sending the check for a few months now, but I haven't got anything yet. And I assume that's when I cash that check, like, my free supercharging goes away. I don't know how that works just yet. But a bunch of people are saying that they never even used the referral program when they bought a Model 3, and they ended up having the supercharger, the free supercharging too. So I feel like at one point there were so many people, like everyone that was buying a Tesla was buying it on the referral program, that probably like Tesla didn't have something in their system that says if it was on or not, because it just assumed it's on the referral program.
Yeah.
Either way. Yeah, it's still a welcome. I think the program is going to be welcomed by owners, because it's at least partially more accessible to it. It's not just going to be the top YouTubers and bloggers like us that's going to get the cars, at least this time, or at least long term. I mean, if I understand the program correctly, right now it's really like the top one is getting one every month, and then you cannot win it twice. Then it's still going to take a while before you can get into the people that don't don't have a large following. And I think I get it right based on what Elon said and what's on the referral page right now. But if you think, if you interpret it differently, let us know in the comment section. The other thing that Tesla did to drive them in at the end of the quarter, are the referral program with the delay on the price increase, was also bringing back free supercharging for 3 years. So it's not a 1,000 miles for supercharging. It's a free unlimited supercharging for 3 years. We have sources in Tesla sales staff that says that Tesla authorized people to give that to current Tesla owners upgrading their car by the end of the quarter. So that's literally a discount for the end of the quarter. You need to both place your order and get the car also. So you need to be able to get that car by the end of the quarter in order to get that. And the way Tesla is presenting it, because of course they don't want to make it sound like it's a discount, because officially Tesla never gives discounts, which is of course not entirely true, is that the Tesla owners are being grandfathered in. So it's the Model S and X owners, we already have unlimited free supercharging on their car. If they buy one, which Tesla doesn't offer free supercharging for those cars anymore, they would get it on this one. They would be grandfathered in their supercharging on their new Model S or X. So still only temporary. So I feel like it adds value to the car. So I feel like it's definitely a... yeah. Okay. It's another discount for sure. Sorry about that.
Might be doing a little mic check there.
Yeah.
Can kind of hear a whistle, but I think it's fine. It's not a big deal.
I feel like I'm on my right mic, though, for sure.
Yeah, sounds better now.
All right. What else we have? Tesla. That was an interesting move. Tesla killed the service program, the extended service, yearly service program that they offer to their owners. You can buy out whatever time, when either pre-delivery or after delivery. They are killing that to focus only on a as-needed basis for the service. So you don't have, you cannot schedule a yearly service on the with Tesla anymore, which is for a premium automaker, it's unusual for sure. And normally people that the premium automaker like to sell those because they are kind of a moneymaker, really. But Tesla's approach to it is, they said that looking at the data, like, it's not really useful. Even though they have a bunch of things that they recommend doing as some maintenance, some at a certain frequency, like the cabin air filter every 2 years, tire rotation, brake fluid test, air conditioning service. There's a bunch of things that you do need to get maintenance, but Tesla will not do that now on a yearly basis. Instead, they will just doing on an as-needed basis. And of course, their argument behind it is an argument that a lot of EV enthusiasts as herself have been pushing for a while, is that technically, theoretically, EVs need less maintenance than gas-powered cars.
Yeah, far less.
I mean, if you look at the top maintenance things that you need to do in a car, it's things like the brakes, things like oil changes, and things like that. Or, of course, oil changes is just like not happening on an EV. But things like brakes are also the degradation of the brakes happens a lot slower because the fact that you don't use the brake as much due to the region that you're baking. That said, I feel like there's like another way for the brakes, like that you need some maintenance, is that actually I get a lot of rust on my brakes because I never use them, basically. I feel like every time I go to a garage with my Teslas, they always tell me, man, you should just use your brake just to get that rust out, like every now and then. I don't need to clean it up every time. I don't know if you had ever that same situation.
Yeah, so sometimes when I'll take the Model X after having not driven it for a while, and I'll take it like down the driveway, and my first braking down the driveway is kind of like grind for like, I don't know, maybe 50 feet, and then it brakes like normal. So I feel like that first couple rotations kind of cleans off the rust. Although, hopefully that first couple rotations isn't, when you really need to brake hard.
Yeah, exactly.
So always a good idea if you haven't been braking a lot lately to just clean them off with a quick, you know, couple rotation break.
Yeah. Of course, that's the argument that Tesla is presenting here. And although it does make sense, at the same time, I mean, if you want to be a little more suspicious, it definitely has something to do with Tesla trying to manage their workload right now, the service centers. They've been talking about increasing the capacity for a while now, but there's no doubt that Model 3 is putting a lot of pressure on the service centers too. Even though the reliability of the Model 3 has improved a lot over the last year, so the first few months you spend a lot less time in service. I mean, mine has never needed service aside from like a flat tire, but that's not Tesla's fault. I think yours was fine too, right? Was yours fine?
What do you mean?
Did you get a lot of service time on your Model 3?
Yeah, I had a...
yours is a earlier one. It's much earlier.
Yeah, it was early. There was just like a small glitch where it didn't turn off because there was like a short in the brake light. But
I remember.
It took like 30 seconds to fix when I got it there. And they knew about the problem ahead of time. A few of the vehicles had the same problem. Yeah. I was pretty early in the queue there.
And we had Jamie too, Jamie Sandow, who's got a very early one that he took late December 2017, I think. And he got quite a few problems with it. But people taking delivery the second half of 2018, much fewer issues on those cars. And Tesla's still delivering like a high number of vehicles. So even if just like instead, like, let's say that 10% of the car needed service at some point within the first 6 months, let's say now it's 1%, but it's still a ton of cars that Tesla needs to add service to. So I feel like that move to do just go as needed and not schedule any service appointment, yearly service appointment, I think that's more about also managing the workload at those service stations. I'm going to be looking the next few weeks and months at Norway specifically, because Norway is getting like, they already had the higher number of Tesla vehicles per capita, but with just this month so far, the month is not over. In March, Tesla already delivered over 3,000 Model 3s in Norway. That's more cars than they ever delivered there in a single month. And they just now got another giant shipment of Tesla vehicles, like mainly Model 3s again. So, they were already having some service issue in Norway with Tesla because of their workload, and that was just with Model S and X. They said that they doubled the capacity over the last year. They started deploying their model service fleet and everything. So they did a lot of things to reverse the already bad situation that they had there, and then to expand to prepare for Model 3. But I think it's going to be a great to look at it. It's going to be good to see for the future of Tesla with other markets that are also getting a lot of Model 3s. I think it's going to be a way to get a glimpse at the future of Tesla service to see how they can handle a high capacity. So it's going to be a cool market to watch in the next few months. Not only for that, but for the fact that, I mean, I think in March they probably... I think they might get like over 80% of electric vehicles sales in March because of the Model 3. I think we could get something pretty close to that, which is, we know we've been talking about Norway, I think the tipping point of EVs a while back, but now they're just, it's something else really. It's really exciting to watch because they're showing everybody else that you can do it. You can go 100% EVs, and they're doing it with still only a few models.
One of the talking points of the anti-EV crowd as well, in the winter, it doesn't work out well. Mm-hmm. And Norway is one of those places where there's plenty of winter and it seems to be working out okay for them. And it's not just Tesla. It's like they sell a lot of Leafs and BMWs I think Volkswagen Golf,
E-Golf. Yeah, the Golf is super popular there. And now they're starting to have the Niro and the Kona, like those cars, as you know, are still pretty much compliance cars. They're not delivering in everywhere, but Norway has been a popular market for it. So they are getting a ton of them. Well, a ton of them, like a decent amount of them. Like they are in the top sellers in the EVs for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to some technology news here that could be interesting, though it's still like not confirmed. What happened this week is that Tesla updated the Model S and X page. Let's go back to make sure that everyone has that everyone is aware of what happened with the Supercharger V3. When Tesla released the Supercharger V3 a few weeks ago, they released it for Model 3. This was specifically launch of Supercharger V3 for Model 3. It wasn't Supercharger V3 for all the cars. And they did say that Model S and X going to get an upgrade on V3. They're going to be able to take a higher charge rate, but they didn't confirm what was that charge rate, which for Model 3 is 250 kilowatts. So it's we're not sure what's happening with Model S and X charge rate when it comes to V3. Now, what happened this week? Coming back to this week, Tesla updated the Model S and X page to show that instead of the 30 minutes to get 170 miles of range on any supercharger station, Tesla updated the language for 15 minutes to get 170 miles of range on at supercharger locations. So double the charge rate, basically, but they also changed from any supercharger location to supercharger location. So that's presumably mean that's not all location, and those locations are supercharger V3. So we assume that Tesla was talking about the new V3 charge rate on Model S and X. But then we reached out to Tesla about the update on their website, and as soon as we did that, Tesla reverted to the 30 minute instead of 50 minutes. And we have a source that we cannot confirm, that I don't know we can trust 100%, that said that it was a mistake that Tesla updated the website. So just take that with a grain of salt.
Right.
But yeah, a guy on Reddit, I want to give him credit because he did some pretty good math there. Protomech did the math, the math, and it basically adds up to 210 kilowatts charge rate for Model X long range, which is, of course, the 100 kilowatt hour Model S.
Which sounds like pretty close to what it would be like if, you know, it's somewhere between the Model 3 charging and what it is now. So the big question is this a mistake or was it just released? I mean, obviously it was a mistake, but was it a like just total random mistake or was it, so, you know, future news released early?
Was it a mistake that they shouldn't have released it so soon? Or was it a case where it's really wasn't the right charge rate and someone in marketing just screwed up? I mean, it's hard to tell, really. But like you said, if we were to guess what would be like, because if it's 250 kilowatts, Tesla would have announced it right away at the same time as Model 3.
Right.
Unless it's just not ready to be in the car and the new cars.
Right. So it's in the pipeline.
Yeah, it's in the pipeline. So it's either one of those. But yeah, 210 kilowatts would make a lot of sense, really. For it might be something in the case where, because you'd still need a hardware upgrade for that. Like, as far as we know from the current Model S or the before any changes in the last few weeks, if there was any, you couldn't have achieved that. But what happened if, like, why Tesla couldn't get the 250? It might be a situation where Tesla retained the current architecture for the Model S and the battery battery pack, meaning they didn't upgrade the 18650 cells to 2070 or whatnot. But they might have tweaked the chemistry, might have new wiring that can accept a new new conductors, new connectors that can support that higher charge rates.
So again, If I'm betting on it, I think that I think actually what's happening is Tesla has upgraded the wiring on the Model S and X, and they're actually building it now. But they have cars in inventory that have the old wiring, and they don't want to advertise on the site that they've got this faster rate until all those cars are cleared through inventory. Once those are all sold and, you know, off the lots, then they can advertise the faster price and, you know, send out a software update. That's my guess, but you know,
I think that makes a lot of sense. That's
and you know, I don't believe your source.
Yeah, I don't either. It's not one of our usual anonymous sources, guys.
No,
connect the dots yourself. Yeah, another thing that happened this week, Tesla started remotely increasing the power output of Model 3 vehicle through software update. So that's something that was promised when they launched the $35,000 Model 3 last month. It's a 5% power output upgrade on all cars, though with the recent software update, it looks like only the rear-wheel drive Model 3s are getting it so far, though Tesla promised it for all cars. So it's not like the range upgrade, which we cast some doubt about last week. The power output upgrade, it sounds like it's really a real one for all cars. And we had Jeff Benjamin from 95 Mac, who got a rear-wheel drive Model 3s, and he got the update this week, and he did notice that it's a little bit peppier. But for the performance version, which again was promised the update to, it should result in a higher top speed to 162 miles per hour, I think. So that's great too. But apparently people are getting that update or not on the all-wheel drive cars are not seeing the same power output increase that in the release notes and in the actual software of the car. So we'll keep an eye out for that. But might be just a gradual rollout thing that happened in the past. It's not nothing to worry about.
You want to hear something weird?
Yeah.
I got the mileage update, which we don't know if it was really mileage, but now mine fully charged goes to 317 or 318 miles instead of 310 before or 325 it's supposed to go to. So I don't know what that means. I mean, I guess it's cold out. Like, obviously, I'm up here in Vermont. It's not surprising that I would have less mileage, but usually it goes up to where it says it's going to go. So kind of weird. But maybe, you know, in the summertime, it'll say 325.
Right, yeah, now. Well, we right need now, to do some testing on that, yeah.
Yep.
One more thing with Tesla. Elon said that they are starting to roll out this week the new autopilot, navigate on autopilot update that does not require you to confirm each lane change. So that's starting to gradually roll out this week. So it's not going to be a full rollout right away, but it's going to come in soon to a car near you. At the same time, you have the enhanced summon. So we reported on that a few weeks ago, the enhanced summon. It's the one that's basically summon, but with a little more leeway on what you can navigate in parking lots. I mean, we just posted that this morning, some videos of it, like a quick demonstration of the first non-early access owners that are getting it. And, I mean, it's nothing that impressive to look at, really. Especially the people that are doing it in the empty parking lot. Like, it's... All right, but
baby steps. I
mean, yeah, baby steps, and you can see where Tesla is going with that. I think they're just being like really cautious about it, which makes sense, of course. You want to be cautious about that stuff. GM, the Bolt EV. There was an announcement on Earth today that. Okay.
Not really for the Bolt, but...
Yeah, based on the Bolt. The Orion plant, Orion Township plant in Michigan, where they are building the Bolt EV, they announced a $200 million investment to produce a new electric Chevy based on the Bolt EV.
Right, which we've been excited about for quite some time, because there's a
were
lot...
Were we?
Well...
You were.
The proverbial we. here's why. In a couple of slides, GM released what looks like a kind of interesting car that could be based on the Bolt. Theoretically, it could have all-wheel drive. You know, maybe you double, maybe you have two electric motors at 200 horsepower each. All of a sudden, you've got a pretty interesting vehicle. And if it's an SUV or even a CUV, which it's labeled as, and it kind of looks like, all of a sudden, you're like in the most popular car segment with a pretty compelling vehicle. And, you know, depending on what you like in cars, it either looks good or doesn't. But, you know, like it's not Pontiac Aztec bad, at least from these initial pictures. Now, we thought these were going to China. So this is kind of interesting to me. When GM talked about Cadillac being its kind of like primary EV source or its initial brand, that kind of said to me that they weren't going to bring anything else to market in the US before the Cadillac. And the words they used kind of made it seem like Cadillac was going to be GM's next EV was going to come from Cadillac. That's kind of what I thought. I don't know. Did you think that?
No, I didn't think that. Okay.
You need to go back to when they released those slides about the lineup of EVs they were going back with. They said they were releasing, I think, 12 EVs in the next few years.
Yeah.
But if you go further down in that thing, they already announced, that was back in late 2017, I think, or maybe early 2018. And they said that there was going to be three new cars within the next 3 years that they're going to launch, that are going to be based on the Bolt EV. After right. that, starting in 2021, they're going to start releasing electric vehicles based on their new generation electric powertrain technology. And the first one's going to be that one that they announced and they released the concept for the Cadillac one. So that's going to be the first one based on the new generation, and then all the new cars going to be. So that's why I'm not as excited as you about this, is because those three new cars are all going to be based on the powertrain of the Bolt EV, which came out in 2016 and hasn't been upgraded since. So unless there's this kind of surprise and they do come out with some powertrain upgrades and stuff like that, it sounds like it's a Bolt EV with a different body or something. That's what it sounds like right now.
Yeah, hopefully bigger wheels, maybe a little bit longer as well. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, you can make a better Bolt EV for sure with a different bodies, with different modification. I'm sure. I just don't know like how excited I can be on a 2016 platform, and knowing the pace at which electric powertrains are improving, I don't know if it's the right move. Like, but they are a big automaker that moves extremely slow, and their next big thing right now is the next gen powertrain, which is coming out in 2021. So right now it looks like they want to stay relevant in the space by leveraging the Bolt EV to do other things.
Yeah, and I was also surprised that, what was the number, 400 new employees? Like, that doesn't sound like they're really
LG. You need to remember the Bolt EV is LG.
There's a lot of LG.
So that $300 million investment is to increase the production of the GM side of things, that they're orienting, which is actually like the assembly of the car and the body and stuff like that, which is still a big deal. Like, I'm not trying to build on them on that, but they're going to still be highly dependent on LG, I think, to make those cars, though, basically those new variants of the Bolt EV. So, I mean, maybe I sound a little bit pessimistic on it, but I don't want to get my hopes up, because I just don't think like it's. I'm still looking forward to seeing those cars and see what they do, but I feel like overall it's like you just said, like 400 new employees, like 300 million. It's still probably going to be limited production, so the prices are going to probably be still similar to the Bolt EV. And then what's happening with the tax credit in the U.S.?
Right.
Like the Bolt EV without the tax credit is hard sell on a lot of people. So.
Yeah, and so if they get this new CUV out, which theoretically is going to be significantly bigger than the Bolt, they need to get it out quickly, because as soon as the Model Y is on the market, it's going to be an even tougher sell.
Yeah, for sure. But it's also shady.
Right.
What else? Oh, yeah, that VW, that Volkswagen news, I think kind of went under the radar, but I think it's an important one, because especially in the context of talking about GM and their supposed commitment to electric vehicles. Volkswagen this week, according to a report from local media in Germany, I think it's a Welt German newspaper, they reported that Volkswagen threatened to exit the German Automaker Association, which is a very powerful lobbying group in Germany. They threatened to exit it due to their policies regarding electric vehicles. So,
some bravo. Context, bravo.
Yeah, bravo for sure. And some context to understand why this is significant is that automakers have been using those kind of lobbying groups forever to put a lot of pressure on politicians to reduce fuel economy standards, to reduce ZEV mandates, to really undermine electric vehicles in all aspects of politics. And best example is here in the U.S., where this equivalent group in the U.S. that represent automakers, both foreign automakers and American automakers, they successfully lobbied the EPA and the Trump administration to block the fuel consumption. They got the EPA and Trump on board on locking the fuel consumption that was agreed upon during the Obama era. So the important thing here is while they were doing that, companies like GM were part of that association as a group representing them was lobbying against those fuel economy standard. They were claiming that they were going all electric. They were all in on electric was their actual words. We pointed that sort of kind of bureaucracy out when it happened. And GM exec actually executive actually reached out to me during that one when I said that. And that exec said that they didn't agree with what the group was doing in regards to fuel economy. He said that. So when I asked, then why don't you exit the group or at very least come out publicly against the action they were taking regarding the fuel economy? And they said, yeah, we don't want to do that because there's still a bunch of other things that the group is doing that we agreed on regarding the safety or whatever it is. So we don't want to do that. My point with that is like, is there anything more important than like the fuel economy right now and just like and going electric with the whole industry and like tackling that problem with those problems with climate change and whatnot? So I feel like that was the biggest thing and they didn't want to come out against it. VW is doing exactly that now. They are saying like, this is a big issue. And if you're not on board with it, we won't be on board with you. And of course, Volkswagen is the biggest German automaker. So if they put pressure like that on the group, it might do something. Now, Volkswagen's specific problem with it is especially that the group is supporting those hydrogen fuel cell cars and they are using the whole alternative fuel approach to cleaning up the industry. And of course, Volkswagen is very aware of what that is. And they know that the alternative fuels now is not a good option, especially after the Dieselgate and all that. So they know that the all electric is really the approach. So they are pushing for them to just drop those alternative fuel thing and focus on battery electric. And the group is not completely on board. And of course, you have other automakers like Mercedes, which has been still pretty much on board with the fuel cells to a second degree. I don't think if they are still to this day, but just last year they released a new one. BMW, not as much, right? BMW is not that big on fuel cells, I think.
I've not heard anything from BMW on fuel cells. I think they're all in on batteries.
Yeah, so I don't know like what's the old of them, like if both BMW and Volkswagen are not that into fuel cells. I know Mercedes is at least dabbling in it, but I do think they're more focused on battery electric. So yeah, that's also interesting that they're focusing on that. Maybe there's some other forces at play influencing that. I don't know. All right, we're going to end this one on a good note, partially good note. I think good note in general is going to accelerate EV adoption for sure, which is, of course, our main mission here at Trek. The federal government in Canada just released their new budget, and it includes a few initiatives to promote electric vehicles, including a $5,000 discount on new electric cars and fuel cells cars.
Weird cutoff, though, I thought.
Yeah, the cutoff is pretty obviously trying to keep Tesla out of it. $45,000, your car needs to cost $45,000 or less. And the Model 3 starts at $47,000 in Canada. The Leaf, though, is still in. I think the Bolt, it is in certain markets, maybe not all markets in Canada. The Hyundai Ioniq is going to be cheap. You guys, don't sleep on the Hyundai Ioniq. I mean, one of our...
If you can get one.
Colleagues in Ontario when they were still having that big
before the Ford event
before the conservative took over and killed it. I think it ended up paying like $20,000 Canadian dollars.
Not even
for his Ioniq. So in places like in Quebec, we still have so that while this is a building, like you guys in the US, like hey, you guys, we always had that, so it's not a surprise for us. Well, you guys had a federal one. And a few states had also incentive. We never had a federal one in Canada, but a few states did have an incentive. Quebec had one for a long time at $8,000. And Ontario, of course, had one, as we just mentioned. BC was also had one on and off. But now in places like in Quebec where you can add up the 8,000 for Quebec and the 5,000 for the federal government. I mean, what you guys are waiting for, just buy those EVs.
That's a lot of loonies.
Yeah, that's a lot of loonies. And yeah, but there's the $45,000 thing, so you're going to have to look into that. But I kind of have a feeling that, like Tesla did the same thing in Germany, where in Germany, they also like cut them off, like right on the spot. They went with 6,000 euros and cut off all the Model S and X. And Tesla did the whole unbundling thing where they remove a ton of option. They made it, they made the option things that were standard. They made it, they sold it as option to base the MSRP down to a certain level so people can buy after as aftermarket the other options. And I feel like they could do that if it's just like a $2,000 difference, but that's just going to be for the standard Model 3 though. I don't think it's going to work for the other ones.
So they would say 45,000 Canadian for the Model 3, but you only have access to 40 kilowatt, for instance, of the battery. And then if you want the extra kilowatts of the battery, you've got to pay a $2,000 Canadian, you know, whatever.
And that's an option, but though if you look at what they did in Germany, that's not what they did. They didn't go with the software log battery pack. They went with like all the premium technology option, everything in the car, and like for example, like the GPS. They could like remove the GPS aspect of it and say, "Oh, it's going to be $2,000 for the GPS." But like people in the know, they just buy it anyway. Like, it, $2,000 is way too much expensive with the GPS, but. You need one, so you know, all right, I'm gonna do it. But I know that's actually what I'm paying for is the 5,000 federal tax credit.
Right.
You could argue that it's like it's shady to do that, to try to do a loophole type of things. But and now I know that I'm gonna sound like I'm advocating for the government to subsidize like premium sedans and people that like only as some.
I feel like 35,000, like Tesla's worked really hard to get the price down to 35,000. I feel like just give it to them.
Yeah, but my main argument is not that. It's more like the fact that the goal of the incentive is to convince people to buy an electric vehicle over a non-electric vehicle. And that's true throughout the entire segment of each segment of the industry. That means if someone is looking on the market for a premium sedan, it's not going to be $35,000. So... you still want them to go with an electric one instead of a gas-powered one because you want to represent what they're doing for the environment and the health of local population with the air pollution and everything into the price of that car. You want to factor that in, and that's true throughout from a $50,000 pickup or a little. It's actually, you could argue that it's. Bigger impact for a premium sedan that's like an EVier car that's going to consume more than it is for a small compact car. Of course, it's a difficult way to look at it because at the end of the day, it's still just giving $5,000 to someone that's buying a like $50,000-$60,000 car, whatever car we're comparing it to. So it's hard to sell. But
why don't they just say take 10% off the price of whatever? Like that would be. I don't know. I guess that would be like $100,000 car would be $10,000.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not the way you want to go. Then bigger discounts to
the rich people.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, the best way to do it is go with the actual impact on carbon. So the more carbon consumed, the less carbon consumed, the bigger should be the incentive. But that's another sell for right now than those like zero incentives. So that's what you're going with. I mean, we'll take it. We'll take it because it's going to help for sure. It's going to accelerate the adoption of EVs in Canada. And I think in the next 2 years, it's very important. After the next 2 years, I think there's going to be so many great EVs at attractive price point that I don't think it's going to be big of a deal. But for the next 2 years, I think that $5,000 can make a big difference in accelerating the adoption.
Yep.
All right. That's exciting. Thanks a lot to everyone for listening. Thanks a lot to our sponsor, Dandelion. And thanks a lot for our subscribers on YouTube, on Patreon, and on all those podcast apps that you like so much. And we're going to see you same place, same time next week. Ciao.